Well, Joshua 14 from verse 6, I want to think about Caleb. Well, he's called here a Kenizzite, and that could refer to the Gentile tribe that are called just that in Genesis 15, and yet he is also a prince of the tribe of Judah. So it's as if he was a Gentile who had been fully accepted into the tribe of Judah. And yet Caleb means dog, and I think that is alluded to when we are told, he says, verse 8, I wholly followed Yahweh my God. As if, yeah, sure, I'm a Gentile dog, but I followed as a dog follows my God. So he has that humility to him, no pretension about him at all. He says, verse 7, I was 40 years old when Moses sent me from Kadesh to spy out the land, and I brought him word again as it was in my heart. And we love him for that, really. He was absolutely persuaded in his heart that that land which he had seen, with the high-walled cities and the large-sized people living there, that we can easily overcome this. You remember how Rahab later says that when we heard what God did at the Red Sea, we were terrified. There was no spirit left within us. We were so weak. And Caleb perceived that, and he really believed in his heart that really and truly this is the kingdom and we can take it. But his heart is contrasted in verse 8 with that of Israel. My brothers who went up with me made the heart of the people melt. And that's exactly what Rahab says that the Canaanites were doing. Their hearts melted, she said. And yet Israel's heart melted. They were scared stiff of each other. So the apparently insuperable obstacles to our inheriting the kingdom are actually nothing like they seem. Addictions, weaknesses, etc. These can be overcome. I think one thing that stands out from here is how separate Caleb was from his brethren. That in his heart, he absolutely knew and believed that Israel could possess the land. But the heart of his brothers, his brethren, melted. They didn't believe that. So I think Caleb stands out as someone who was separate from his brethren. You think of Daniel in Babylon refusing to eat the king's meat and drink the king's wine, and yet the majority of the other youngsters did. And you think of the contrast between Daniel and Esther. She was also a Jewess, a bit later, admittedly, but also in exile, and she has no problem in wanting to set up a wine party, a cheese and wine party, if you like, for the king and Haman. She is absolutely subsumed within the culture of Persia at that time. She doesn't even say that she's a Jewess. Nobody guessed she was a Jewess. It was all a bit of a shock when she basically comes out to the king and Haman and says, by the way, I'm Jewish. And like, oh, wow. Well, I never knew that. So she had assimilated, whereas Daniel hadn't. And yet she eventually had faith. But I think what you see from this is that there are times when you have to stand separate from your brethren, or when you are out of step with your brethren, where you have to stand with your back to the world over this issue or that issue. And I don't think there's any believer who has actually not experienced that at some point in their lives, where it's not that you're cranky and difficult and say, oh, well, if that's going on in the church, I'm leaving, or I'm not coming to the meeting. I don't mean that. I'm not talking about that, which is sort of primitive and childish and sort of type A personality sort of behavior. I'm not talking about that. I mean that in your heart, you have to be different. That is all intended by God, because it's part of our individuation. He thirsts for personal, unique relationship with each of us. And so I think that, therefore, those sort of things happen where your heart is somehow out of step with that of your brethren on various issues. And typically people would say, oh yes, well, I had to stand up for principle, and they were all weak and apostate, and I was strong. Not necessarily. could be, and I think it very often is, the other way, that they are all judgmental and cranky about some issue, and you say, no, I'm afraid that is not the way of Jesus. And if I stand with my back to the world, so I do. And as I say, these interpersonal situations are used by God to make you individuate so that you are his. And he says, I wholly followed Yahweh my God. And as I've said, Caleb means dog. And there's a lot of emphasis on following Yahweh. Well, don't forget, the angel had gone ahead of them. And the hornet, however you interpret the hornets, had gone ahead of them to prepare the way for them. And he perceived that providential leading of God and was eager to follow it. And that's how we should be, that we are on a journey, and the path of that journey is clearly to God's kingdom. That is the end point. And the Lord Jesus has gone ahead of us. You know, the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of God's people, 3 days' journey, like the Lord was 3 days in the grave, etc. And we are to follow where we are led. And he says, verse 11, I am as strong today as I was in the day that Moses sent me. But the word that's translated strong there is not the usual word for physical strength. I think it more refers to sort of mental strength and determination of faith. He's saying that, look, despite the 40 years, I am still just as determined, just as sure that we can inherit it. Now, he was 85 years old at this time. He was not a young man. And so he asks to be given the hill country, verse 12, of which Yahweh spoke in that day. Well, although it's not recorded in the record of Joshua and Caleb spying out the land, it would seem that Caleb had explored around Hebron as a spy. And he'd taken a special liking to it, and God had said, okay, you can have this. And he actually had the ambition to ask for it. Despite the fact that the Anakim were there, in great and fortified cities, it was an area where there were giants living, and if you go down to verse 15, the name of Hebron before was Kiriath Arba, after the greatest man among the Anakim. So Hebron was where the leader of the giants, the Anakim, lived, and the greatest man amongst them lived there. And yet Caleb has the spiritual ambition to say, I want this for me, knowing that he was going to have to drive out the very strongest of the giants. He was absolutely sure in his heart. Now, this is spiritual ambition, is it not? And we need that ambition in a spiritual sense. And you do find the equivalent Greek word for ambition in the New Testament. I love how the AV quaintly says, I wish that you study to be quiet. And the word for study there is to be ambitious. Be ambitious to be quiet, to be humble. And so, all the same, we are asked to have some desire. I want this. I want this in my inheritance eternally, and we'll be given it. And yet you notice with Hebron that although he does take it, and he does drive out these people, these Anakim, these giants, Hebron was a priestly city. So he gave it away to the Levites. It was not all about me. I want this in God's kingdom. He was given it, but he gave it away. Now, as I say, he asked for Hebron and God gave it to him. And that spiritual ambition, I think, inspired others. Aksar, his daughter, was the same. She specifically asked Joshua for an inheritance in Joshua 15. And I think she in turn inspired the daughters of Zelophehad, who in Joshua 17 pluck up the courage to ask for an inheritance for themselves. And this is how it should be in any healthy congregation of believers, that there are ripples of inspiration sent out. And Caleb inspired his daughter Aksar, and I think she in turn inspired the daughters of Zelophehad. So then, he was given that which he sought for. And the question really is, what do you really want? What are your ambitions? And ultimately, our ambitions should not be to clear your mortgage, to get, as you see it, a smart wife, smart husband, cool kids, get them through university, nice cars, holiday house, and all the rest of it. This is the dream of the capitalist system, and it is a pathetically low level of ambition. The ultimate ambitions that we have are to overcome sin, to overcome that besetting set of weaknesses that you have in your character, to live eternally in God's service, 24/7 serving Him for eternity, establishing God's kingdom. These are the things that we should seek for. And here's the great example, really, of Caleb, that you seek those things, and even at 85 years old, you are still strong in your desire and your commitment totally for that agenda, and not for any personal agenda at all.